Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Orla, thank you very much for that. Now, hospitals and medical facilities, which have been caught up in intense fighting in Gaza, are at a crisis point. Dr. Nahreen Ahmed is a pulmonary and critical care doctor and the medical director of the humanitarian aid group Med Global. She recently returned from a two-week volunteer trip to Gaza, where she says these crises are growing rapidly. Dr. Ahmed, you're very welcome to the programme this afternoon. As I say, you've recently spent 2 weeks in Gaza. Can you tell us about the latest trip?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. This was my second trip to Gaza since the war has started. I was there in January and spent about 2.5 weeks at Nasser Hospital right before the siege happened. And it's an important point to mention that because on my second trip back, most recently, the number of functional hospitals, or really rather partially functional hospitals, has reduced significantly. And in fact, currently, all across Gaza, there are only 10 partially functioning hospitals. The last time I was in Gaza, even just a few weeks back, that number was 12. So as time moves on and this crisis continues, this war continues, the number of partially and not even fully functional hospitals continues to reduce. The situation in every hospital, because of the fact that there are so many patients that are in need, and that's from patients who have chronic medical diseases that have not been able to get regular care, to patients who are injured from traumatic injuries, air missile strikes, things like that. And the hospitals are overwhelmed. They're overwhelmed with patients. There are people sleeping in the hallways because that's where people believe that they might be safe. And space is extremely limited. And so this is just kind of the scene that you see. And of course, you know, having spent time in the emergency room and in the ICU of some of these hospitals, it's an overwhelmingly high number of children that we're seeing as well.
And can you tell me what sort of injuries you're seeing children coming into the hospital with?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. You know, we see injuries from what's called blast injury, and this is when the blast wave from a missile strike is so strong that it can injure and cause internal injury for anyone. And so we, you know, one of the worst nights that I remember and recall was when we had pronounced, I think it was a total of 7 children that were dead on arrival. And this was all from blast injury with internal bleeding. Other injuries that we're seeing are shrapnel. We're seeing children, just their bodies littered with shrapnel. And I know that some of my colleagues have also witnessed single bullet injuries as well. And so a combination of these are really what we're seeing in the children. It's absolutely horrific to see this in anyone, let alone children.
You know, we've been covering this conflict extensively on the programme for the last 6 months over the course of the conflict, and the situation when it comes to medical care has obviously been deteriorating and deteriorating to the point which you're now describing, where there's now 10 medical facilities functioning. It's hard to sort of contemplate or to understand, I think, for people the reality of what that means then, particularly in the middle of a conflict when you have so little access to medical facilities. Like, what does that look like then for people who need help?
Yeah, I mean, the best example I can give you is that, one of the most common things that we see are wound infections. And so I want people to imagine just a basic infection that they can go to hospital and get antibiotics for, and those would be the correct antibiotics, and the infection heals. In this particular situation, patients are being seen in hospital with severe wound infections, and there are not enough antibiotics or even the correct antibiotics to treat these very preventable infections from getting worse. And so people are dying from things that are fully treatable and preventable because we don't have the right supplies available. And this is just a simple example. You know, something else that we're seeing is that the level of malnutrition is on the rise. So it's not just that, you know, that the hospitals are seeing the scores of injured patients that are coming in from airstrikes alone, but this is now we're seeing patients coming in, especially again, children coming in with complications of severe malnutrition. And so now hospital beds are being occupied by, you know, a number of different reasons. And these reasons are not, again, not just war injury, but because of the consequences of the lack of primary healthcare access, You can imagine that there have been so many stories about the state of maternal health. Mm. Women are giving birth and being discharged from the hospital within anywhere from 2 to 4 hours, and that is absolutely unprecedented. It's unheard of, and it's absolutely inhumane. But that is what hospitals are having to do because they don't have the space to accommodate the numbers of women that are coming in to deliver. And on top of that, you know, prenatal care is limited. You know, every aspect of the healthcare system. Of a system that people would have access to, whether it's primary care, prenatal care, postpartum care, care for trauma injuries, all of that is limited. And that, you know, what that looks like is people dying in scenarios where they shouldn't be. And what that looks like is hospitals and healthcare workers in severe distress because they don't have the tools they need. What that looks like is our surgeons that are putting together and engineering external fixators. These are what is used when fractures happen, and they're vastly under-resourced in Gaza. And no matter how many external fixators for fractures that are brought in, these run out so quickly because they're used so much. And in one particular hospital in the north, one of the surgeons was telling me that because they haven't had these for so long, that they're actually making them. They're actually making them with the help of engineers. So that's the situation that people are in.
You mentioned the north there, and we saw earlier this week Al-Shifa, or what remains of Al-Shifa after the Israeli occupation of the hospital for the last for the 2 weeks previous to that. Again, the WHO saying the hospital was the biggest hospital on the strip, now completely out of use. What sort of impact will that have overall? Because I think it was providing 35% of the healthcare for Gaza as a whole.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. So already we are hearing from our colleagues at the WHO that the surrounding remaining hospitals are being flooded with patients. They are understaffed. They're overwhelmed because patients that were at Shifa or expecting to go there are now, of course, going to other hospitals nearby. So, you know, of course, what that looks like is that these hospitals that are even more under-resourced than Shifa was are now dealing with the influx of patients. You know, I actually have been up to the north. I was on a UN convoy to assess two areas in the north, including a pediatric hospital in the north. And you know, the destruction in the north is so widespread, and the entirety of the north is almost fully decimated, that even movement from one location to another is really challenging. So what you're going to see is that even though Shifa is not functional, patients will have a hard time getting from one place to another to even access any of these other hospitals that are even partially functional. And so that's a whole nother aspect of this regarding access that's truly challenging. And it's, you know, access not just for, imagine if it's like that for patients, you know, the UN convoys that are going up are having trouble with access. So imagine what that's like for, you know, a civilian in the north to actually access any of these hospitals or remain safe.
Can I ask you finally, Dr. Ahmed, about the effect on medical staff for all of this, you know, not having access to the medical supplies that you need to try and treat people, and what I can't even imagine in terms of the distressing situations that medical staff are dealing with. How are they coping?
Gosh, you know, this is a tough question because, you know, what I want everyone to remember is that the healthcare workers themselves are displaced. The healthcare workers themselves are victims here, and they have an enormous weight on their shoulders to show up to work to help their community. And as international medics are coming in and going, and we are doing everything we can to support our Palestinian colleagues, it's so hard to see what they're going through on a day-to-day basis, worried about where their families are, worried about whether their family members are safe. Some, you know, while we were in Nasser, there are some healthcare workers that had their families living in the hospital with them. On one particular night when the hostilities were growing quite close to Nasser, many of the healthcare workers needed to leave to go make sure that their families were safe. So they're operating and working in conditions that are terrifying for them because they have to focus on treating patients. Meanwhile, also worry about their families and then worry about which hospital might be next. And so that I think is quite concerning. And it's tough. When you ask them, how are you coping? You know, for the most part, the thing that they focus on the most is their work. It's the one thing that is somewhat of a distraction. If they sit for too long, they think about what's going on around them, and it's far too overwhelming. And so I remember speaking to some nurses and doctors at Nasser when I asked them that question, and they said the only thing they can do is just keep working. It's the one thing that just keeps them focused and distracts them from what's going on, even though what they're seeing in front of them is a consequence of that.
Dr. Nahreen Ahmed, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the programme this evening.